And what happened is the players started asking questions around, well, Dre, you seem to put videos out every day, or you're in the gym always working out. And they knew a little bit of my background at this point. Division III college player, barely played in high school. Now you're, you know, working to get into the pros, or you're already in the pros, but you're in between jobs, but you still show up every day and work out. So they want to know, what is the driving factor that keeps you showing up every day to practice, even though practicing hasn't quite gotten you the goal that you want yet? And that's a very good question. Or they would ask, how do you have the self-belief to perform the way you need to perform in a game? Because a lot of people who haven't played sports may not quite understand this, but it's a whole different world from practicing in the gym by yourself a sport and then going into the game and there's 500 people in the stands. It's a whole different environment, even though it's the exact same game. And a lot of people deal with performance anxiety, so I would get a lot of questions about that. And then they would ask, well, man, you had all these setbacks, things not working in your favor, Dre. What was it that kept you going, even when all the signs in front of you, quote unquote reality, said, you should probably give this up?
It still hits, I don't miss it. It's go, 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 like a go, go flow. And I'm almost done, and I told y'all so. When I throw these flows, like it's Rochambeau. And I ain't too close, it's Joe Schmo goes. And I'm on my grind, that is all the time. I do not do breaks, that's right, I stay in dry. And look, I'm back with a little bit of that. A little more cash than I came with. Ready, that cat is out that bag. But I still ask for the boy, got skills. I don't need her, I don't need him, I don't need help with me, I got this. I can sing songs, I can spit raps, and I can do both, even do this, word.
This episode is brought to you by Anthracite Pallet Solutions. Need reliable, durable pallets to keep your business moving? At Anthracite Pallet Solutions, we specialize in new and used 48x40 wooden pallets. Whether you're shipping, storing, or stacking, we offer high-quality pallets that keep your operations running smoothly. With our own fleet of trucks and trailers, we deliver on time, every time. And if warehouse space is a concern, our drop trailer services have you covered. From custom orders to large-scale deliveries, we're here to meet your every need with top-notch customer service and unbeatable prices. We're currently shipping within 2 hours of Scranton, Pennsylvania, including Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, and Maryland. Call us today at 570-606-9206 or inquire online at anthracitepallet.com and let us handle your pallet solutions. Anthracite Pallet Solutions, built to last. Designed to move. This episode is brought to you by Sweat Tent, the pioneers of the portable wood-burning sauna. Did you know that using the sauna 3 to 4 times per week could reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease by up to 50% and make you 60% less likely to experience Alzheimer's disease? That's why I've been a big fan of the sauna for years. But having to go to a crowded gym to do it isn't ideal. And all the at-home options are bulky and expensive. That's why I only use the Sweat Tent for my sauna needs. It's the most storable and affordable wood-burning sauna on the market. It not only takes minutes to set up, but it can reach 200 degrees Fahrenheit in 30 minutes or less. So whether you're enjoying it yourself in your backyard, with friends, or in need of a reliable sauna on the go, Sweat Tent is your best choice for the most portable, storable, and enjoyable outdoor sauna experience. All On The Stacks listeners will receive $100 off when you use code OTS. Visit SweatTent.com today to get $100 off your purchase with code OTS at checkout. Again, that's SweatTent.com to get $100 off with code OTS. Sweat Tent, helping you fire up your home wellness routine. This episode is brought to you by FitAF. If you haven't already noticed, I live and breathe entrepreneurship. Whether it's launching new ventures, attending pitch meetings, or mentoring budding entrepreneurs, my schedule is jam-packed. And that's where FitAF steps in. Their menu changes weekly, offering a variety of chef-inspired meals designed by nutrition experts using only the best quality ingredients, keeping me fueled and focused. Their vast selection of meals has you covered for all types of dietary restrictions and diet plans, including keto, paleo, vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free, and more. As an On The Stacks listener, enjoy our exclusive offer. Get 20% off your first order of 7 meals or more when you use code OTS at checkout at fitafnutrition.com. Again, that's code OTS for 20% off your first order of 7 meals or more at fitafnutrition.com. Healthy meals and seamless nutrition, keeping entrepreneurs at the top of their game.
I always find it interesting to hear like what the transition was like, you know, going from playing to not playing. So I'm curious to hear a little bit of your journey. How many years did you play, you know, and kind of, again, going from your professional playing career to, you know, I'm sure you still play, but you don't play like you used to, right? So I'm curious what life was like during that and then after that.
During the playing day. So the first thing is I don't play at all anymore. So when I stopped playing, Bill, I stopped playing cold turkey. So the last game that I played, it was in a tournament. We won some money, and I haven't played a single game since. So a lot of players do slowly transition out, or they'll still play, you know, for fun. But I don't play for fun at all. I never played for fun even when I was playing. I played to compete. And I mean, that can be fun, but it was never just to enjoy the moment for me as a player. It was always about winning versus losing in the sports world. So as far as being a player, I played professionally for almost 10 years. And this started in 2005. I stopped playing in 2015. So it's been about 10 years since I've been out of the game. And getting out was something that was always in the back of your mind if you're not a blue chip, you know, guaranteed superstar player. It may always be in the back of your mind that, hey, what if this doesn't work out? What am I going to do? Because every athlete has to consider that, because it's a playing professional sports, a highly competitive field. If you're trying to become a professional athlete or do anything in the entertainment business, you're in a space where you might not make it, not necessarily because you're not good, but simply because there's a finite number of jobs, as opposed to being a podcaster, a doctor, or a lawyer, or even an entrepreneur. Anyone who wants to do it and gets the, you know, the requisites, whatever they are, let's say a medical degree, or you pass the bar exam, or you buy yourself a mic and turn on a show, or you hang up your shingle and get a customer, technically you can get in the game. And if a million people want to get in the game this month, a million people can get in the game. But in professional sports, there's a finite number of jobs. So if there are, for example, 500 jobs in the NBA, and there are 800 players who are good enough, quote unquote, to play in the NBA, there's going to be at least 300 unhappy people, even though they're good enough, because there's a cutoff. And that's what makes it highly competitive. I was just talking to one of my audiences just the other day, talking about one of the laws of economics. And the first law of economics is supply and demand. And when the supply of something is limited, the demand for it goes up. The reason why being a pro athlete is looked up to the way that it is one, because athletes follow their dreams and they actually reach them. And number two is because everyone who wants to be an athlete cannot make it because there are not enough spaces for everybody to get in. So it's a big deal when you make it simply because you had to beat out so many people. And even once you get in, you're competing against a bunch of people who are trying to take your spot, even while you have it, because you're not guaranteed the spot next year just because you have it this year. So for me, there's a lot of background to that, was I was considering, well, what if I don't make it, what would I do with my life? Now, again, with athletes, we are kind of throwing all our chips into the middle of the table. We're basically selling out to try to make it. So luckily I did make it. But had I not made it, I would have had to figure out, what am I going to do? And then even once I got in the door in professional sports, maybe people who follow on a surface level, you see LeBron James or Kobe Bryant or Tom Brady. These guys get contracts for 3, 4, 5 years. But when you're playing professionally, if you're a player who's kind of on the fringe, or you're playing a lot of players who play overseas outside of the United States, those contracts are basically year by year. If that, sometimes not even year by year, it's game by game. If you don't play, it's not like you actually sign a contract before every game, but it's like, if you don't play well during the game, you might not have a job by the time we have our next game.
By the time you walk off the court.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it is in the basketball space. So you are, like, every day you're playing for your job. Now, every player doesn't think that way, but I looked at it that way the entire time that I was playing professionally. And I understood that even when I signed my first contract, there might be not be a contract number two. Or when I got number two, it might be not be a number three. So I was always thinking, what will I do, or what would I do if and when the phone does not ring again? So for me, the good news was the internet came along around 2000. I mean, the internet was always in existence, but sure, the user-generated content aspect of the internet, which I guess some people call Web 2.0, that started to become a thing around 2005. When Facebook started to come out maybe a year or two after that, and you had places like AOL Instant Messenger, if you remember that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and then you had Yahoo GeoCities. These are all before 2005.
Yeah.
And then you got more tools start to come around. Eventually, you got the tools that we now call social media. Instagram was several years later. Twitter was about 2008. And YouTube was out in 2005. So these are the platforms where anyone who doesn't have any type of coding experience could get on the internet and start creating content that other people could easily consume.
Yeah, you're an OG YouTuber, right?
Yes, that's fair to say.
Yeah.
So I was creating content from 2005. Same time I started playing, I was creating content. But I wasn't doing it as a career path, because who saw that you can make money from any of this stuff?
Right.
It wasn't really obvious till about 2010 that you could make money making content on the internet. And even then, you had to really be good, and you had to kind of be plugged in to making money on the internet. You had to be thinking like an entrepreneur even then. It wasn't until about 2015, Bill, I would say, that it became obvious that even a dummy who doesn't understand anything about money could understand how to make money on the internet. But before that, you had to kind of be thinking about it, and you had to have somewhat of a business mind. I've always had a business mind. We can maybe talk about that later. I was creating that content. I started to build an audience of basketball players. they just wanted to learn more about how to play basketball. They eventually started asking about mindset. So I was showing them how to practice basketball on the court. Then I started talking about mindset around 2010. That's when I started to establish myself as a person who was, hey, this guy knows some stuff when it comes to confidence and discipline and mental toughness, not only for the athletes, but also I started to draw an audience of people who were not athletes starting around 2010. Now, again, I kept playing until 2015. So when I stopped playing in 2015, I already had all these basketball players following me. I had an audience of people who were not basketball players who were getting warmed up to me and coming into my world because they liked the mindset piece of what I was talking about. And I guess it was a novelty that I was drawing my mindset material from my background as a pro athlete. So it was a unique background mixed with, hey, we like this guy's message. And I'd already been selling products from about 2009. That was my mostly training programs for ball players. Then I got into selling mindset courses and things like that. And then I started writing books because self-publishing became a thing around maybe 2010-ish, self-publishing. So I always wanted to, I've always been a writer. I was blogging about my experiences overseas while I was still playing. So all of these things kind of naturally happened as I was, my eyes were open and my ears were open for what could I, how could I use the internet? Because I've always been kind of a closet computer geek, Bill. And how could I use the internet combined with, you know, the skills that I had, which was basketball, and how can I combine that thing with making money? And then from basketball, I noticed the mindset piece, people want it. Then I've always wanted to write. And then, hey, now you can publish your own book. You don't have to go through a gatekeeper to get a book out there. So I started writing books. So all of this I was doing before I stopped playing. So when I stopped playing in 2015, I was only 33 years of age. I could have kept playing. I could still be playing today if I wanted to. Maybe not at the pro level. I don't know if I would have stayed that good, but I could still be playing pretty competitively if I wanted to. I stopped playing because I saw a lot of opportunity business-wise that was out there, and I decided that I was going to shift my focus. And as I told you here, to wrap up this answer, I'm a person who once I decide that I'm going to make a shift, I do the whole shift right there on the spot. This is not, I don't do the gradual phase out the old thing and phase in, and I don't do that. It's as long as I can do it, I can do it that day, I do it that day. So I knew I was going to be getting out of basketball, and I immediately went into how do I start building the business side of what I'm doing now that I have the time on my hands to focus more on that and not just on sports, because it became the new priority. So instead of working out two or three times a day as I was a pro athlete, now I work out once a day, still work out every day, just once a day. And it's a lot less time commitment. And mentally, my focus is more on how do I make things happen in business rather than how do I make things happen on the court or as an athlete. So hopefully that answers your question about the transition.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And I think you already kind of answered this too. I was, as you were talking, it got me, you know, thinking a little bit. And so I think you already kind of answered it, but how you said you went from, you were doing this simultaneously, the content and playing. And yep. Like I said, I think you answered it, but was it just that like you, as you were making this content, you started getting people like more interested in that as well. And like, that's like what really led you to, you know, you said you saw the opportunity on the internet and you had this business mindset, this entrepreneurial mindset that, hey, maybe I might be able to make money from this thing. And like, so was it a combination of that and just interest of people in this mindset, you know, that you were talking about online? That is that what really, you know, drew people to it and really what, you know, light bulb went off in your head and said like, hey, I think, you know, this is something that, you know, I might be interested in doing.
So I first started putting the content online because I had been playing basketball, obviously by that point for many years, but there wasn't a common thing to have video of yourself playing because back then we had VHS tapes and you had to have a camcorder to see yourself play. And it wasn't as easy to access. You had to be at home with the VCR and you had to, you know, rewind it, grab the remote control. Now we were starting to get, at this point, we didn't have video cameras on our phones yet, but now you start to see these digital cameras that were becoming relatively cheap. So I had a cheap little digital camera for $100. I would just bring it with me to the gym and just put the camera on record and just leave it there on the side of the court while I was practicing. So it's not like I was going in there with this some studio setup or a whole lot of planning. Excuse me, at least not at first. And I just wanted to see if what I thought I looked like on the court was what I actually looked like on the court. So I just wanted to see if my vision was what actually was reality. And then when I saw it, I said, okay, some of the stuff actually looks kind of good. And since the internet was out, here's where the first video came from. And this is important because I just mentioned VHS tapes. So for me to get into playing pro basketball, because I went to a Division III college, which is the third tier of college sports. Most pro players come from the Division I level. I went to an exposure camp after graduation to basically better my prospects of making it as a pro, because nobody at the pro level was looking for me at the school that I played at. So I went to the exposure camp as a way of getting more attention for myself and possibly making my name more known in the open job market. I played well at that event, and the footage from that event was on a VHS tape. So I took that footage and put that on YouTube as my first YouTube video. So that's where it started. Then once I, and people started leaving comments on the video and saying, well, who are you? Where do you play? What school do you go to? Et cetera. So I know when people start asking those kind of questions, just from my experience as a player, people only ask you that when they think you're good. So if I went to a local park that I never played at before and played for a few hours, and players came up to me afterwards to say, hey, where do you play at? What school do you go to? Are you trying to play pro? They only ask that if you're good. If you're not good, nobody asks you any questions.
Yeah.
People started leaving those comments on YouTube. Okay, whatever they're seeing, they're impressed by this. And I look like someone who can actually play. So I figured, since I go to the gym every day anyway, I'd always been doing that. Now I have this camera. Now I can put it on YouTube, because obviously there are people out here who see me as a player who can play. So I just jumped on that opportunity, and that's where the first footage came from. Now, moving forward, more footage was coming from the fact that I would always read the comments. To this day, I still read the comments. I don't reply to every comment, but I read the comments and I see what people are saying. And I've always had this ability to deduce from comments that people leave what is the question that they want to ask, but they might not be asking. It was a very important skill if you're going to be a good communicator, is you got to understand not only what people are saying, but also what they're not saying. So I would notice that a player might make a comment about something, and I realize, okay, what they really need is for me to answer this question that they're not asking, and then I will go make a video answering that question.
I see.
This is all through my behavior. This is not, it wasn't me talking to the screen like this. It was me making a dribbling video. So let's say I make a video about how to dunk. I make a video about dunking, and some player says, man, well, I've been trying to dunk, but I don't quite jump high enough. I don't know what I can do about that. Now, they're not really asking a question, they're just making a comment. But then I would realize from that, okay, well, maybe I should show them some of the drills that I do to work on explosive jumping. They didn't ask that, but I realized that's what they need. So then I would answer that question that I noticed that they needed to be asking. So, and that's something that I still use to this very day. And that's where the content would come from. So basically, the responses from the audience told me what's the next thing that they need to know. Now, eventually, in terms of basketball, I pretty much answered every question anybody could ever ask, at least in that era when I was playing. Nowadays, I don't know how much of a basketball fan you are, but nowadays in basketball, it seems like they relax the way they enforce the rules. And I often joke when I watch basketball, like, man, if I was allowed to do that when I was playing, I could make 1,000 more videos. Like that was, yeah. When I was playing, that was illegal. Now you can do it, and that's a move. When I was playing, that wasn't a move. So anyway, if I was playing now, I have 1,000 new video ideas, because I can do all this illegal stuff and it's legal. But anyway, that's where it started when it came to the content. And then it would just be responding to questions. And then I came up with a system to where if I came up with, let's just say, one move, I had a 30-part process that every one move I came up with, it ended up being 30 videos, because I came up with the system that I could use over and over and over and over again. So that's how over the course of that 10 years, I created probably about 8,000 videos for basketball alone. They're still on YouTube to this very day. And those became the foundation for the training programs that I started selling to basketball players. So everything was kind of symbiotic. Everything was working off of each other. As far as the mindset piece, to answer your other question. Now, again, when I first started, all my content was just me on the court, literally doing basketball stuff. I wasn't talking that much. Every once in a while, I might make one talking video where I'm just sitting there talking about, hey, here's how it went when I tried out for the high school team, or here's how I dealt with it when I got cut from the team trying to try out for varsity in school. I would do those every once in a while. And people, I guess, liked some of those when I would explain things, because I was dealing with a lot of kids between ages of 13 and 18 who were trying to make it in basketball. And also, they saw that I was putting these videos out. I was putting these videos out pretty consistently starting around 2009 was when I started doing it every day. Because that's the time when I became a YouTube partner. At the time, that's what they called it. And now I'm monetizing my videos. So now I'm making, that's another revenue stream that I had. And what happened is the players started asking questions around, well, Dre, you seem to put videos out every day, or you're in the gym always working out. And they knew a little bit of my background at this point. Division III college player, barely played in high school. Now you're, you know, working to get into the pros, or you're already in the pros, but you're in between jobs. But you still show up every day and work out. So they wanted to know, what is the driving factor? It keeps you showing up every day to practice, even though practicing hasn't quite gotten you the goal that you want yet. And that's a very good question. Or they would ask, how do you have the self-belief to perform the way you need to perform in a game? There's a lot of people who haven't played sports may not quite understand this, but it's a whole different world from practicing in the gym by yourself a sport and then going into the game and there's 500 people in the stands. It's a whole different environment, even though it's the exact same game. And a lot of people deal with performance anxiety. So I would get a lot of questions about that. And then they would ask, well, man, you had all these setbacks, things not working in your favor, Dre. What was it that kept you going, even when all the signs in front of you, quote unquote, reality, said you should probably give this up? And they would ask, well, you know, how do you get started doing any of this stuff? Because at this point, I'm playing overseas, and there are a lot of basketball players who can maybe read the writing on the wall that, hey, maybe I won't make it to the NBA and play for the Lakers, but maybe I can play overseas. But how do you do it? Because it's unlike being a lawyer or a doctor. There's no clear path to how to play basketball overseas. If I wanted to be a lawyer, all I had to do was go online and it'll tell me, here are the 20 steps you have to follow. You follow all 20 steps, you're a lawyer, officially. It's a very structured path. Professional sports is not a structured path. So you have to kind of figure it out, especially if you're going outside of the USA. And that's where I have spent most of my career. And players would ask, well, how do I get started? Maybe getting known on the internet. Because by this point, we're talking around 2010-ish. And at this time, Bill, this was a great time to be a creator. Anybody who was creating at this time knows this, because this was a point between about 2008 to about 2013. It's about a solid 5-year period. Everybody was consuming social media, or what we now call social media, but not everybody was creating it. So if you were creating, you had all these people watching you, but you didn't have that much competition, because not everybody was making social media, because it wasn't so easy to do it. Nowadays, you can do it from your phone. You can do it from your couch. Back then, you had to actually put some effort into making social media. So it wasn't as much competition. So that was a beautiful time period. Let's just put it that way, for business, audiences, everything, ad revenue, everything, because the competition was so low. By about 2013, that's when you got critical mass. Now everybody does it. Answering the questions, I started talking about things like discipline, confidence, mental toughness, personal initiative. And that was really speaking to the basketball players, but I wasn't speaking about them just as how they apply to sports. I was just speaking about them in general. And I didn't think there was any big deal to that, Bill, because really that was the things that I was saying were things that I already thought. If you want to be a professional at what you do, you have to show up every day and do the work. Even when you don't feel like it, even when it's not working, you got to show up. And when you get into a game, you have to have the ultimate belief in yourself that you're the best player in the gym or on the field, even though you might, by statistics, maybe you're not, but you can't go into the game thinking that. You have to go into the game thinking, I'm the best in the world. It's like a boxer going to the ring. Doesn't matter who you're fighting. You have to go in there thinking that you're the best in the world, because if you go in there with doubt, you're going to get beat up. Or I would talk about mental toughness, that hey, there are times in life you're going to face setbacks and things are not working. Number one, you must take ownership of your situation, because if you don't take ownership, you have no power. And so that's number one, just taking ownership, even if it's not your fault. You don't like the coach, or you think the coach doesn't like you. Well, so what? The reality is you're not on the team. So the goal is to get on the team. So whether you think it's the coach's fault or not, you got to figure this out. And when things aren't going your way, it's the person who keeps showing up anyway is the one who ends up being a success, not the person who quits. So you just got to keep showing up. Regardless of what happened, you got to show up. And then lastly, the personal initiative is that, well, if you sit around and do nothing, nothing's going to happen. So you got to do something. And all of these things that I was talking about, Bill, they were already reflected in my actions, because they could see me on YouTube every day in the gym training. They could hear me talk, and they could hear the confidence in my voice when I explain things. They already knew my background. Oh, this guy barely made the high school team, walked on to play in college. Nobody was asking for him to play pro, but he figured out a way to do it. So they could see the mental toughness in that this guy keeps trying, and they could see the initiative. First of all, he got on YouTube and started making videos. This wasn't a common thing. He got on YouTube and started making videos. He was putting videos out every day, even when there was no money to be made from making videos every day. He goes and explains stuff and breaks things down. He's teaching players how to play basketball, because the reason I knew my target audience at this time, this is one of the main reasons why I became so well known in the basketball space. So anybody who played basketball between 2008 and 2015, they all know me. They may not know me personally, but if you mention my name, every single one of them knows me. And they know me. Now, I'm not telling you that to impress you. Well, a little bit. I'm trying to impress you a little bit. But really, to impress upon you, Bill, that the reason why I was able to do that is, number one, because there was not as many people creating. And number two, I knew my target audience. My target audience was 13 to 24-year-old young men who were aspiring in basketball. They wanted to ascend in basketball. They weren't playing for fun. They were playing because they wanted to move up. Middle school, high school, college, pro. Whether they made it or not is different, but they had the dream. I had been them. So, you know what they say in the business world is that the best customer to serve is the person who is who you used to be, person who's sitting in the seat that you were in 5 or 10 years ago. So I knew exactly what they needed. When I started playing, nobody was showing me how to play basketball. Like, my father was not a basketball guy. I had one sister. She wasn't an athlete. I didn't have anyone in the neighborhood take me under their wing. So I just thought about, what are all the things that, if I was 10 years younger, what are all the things I wish somebody like me at this age would have taught me? What would I have taught myself? So basically, that's all the stuff I put on YouTube. And actually, to this day, Bill, all the stuff that I put out is what I wish somebody told me last week.
What are some of those things?
When it comes to the professional sports world, as opposed to the entertainment space, where it's a lot different. But in the professional sports world, there is a baseline of talent required. So the way I describe it, Bill, is let's just say there's talent from in any sport, baseball, basketball, football. There's 0% talent. There's 100%. If you're going to play a professional sport, you need to be at the 90th percentile and up if to even be eligible. If you're not 90th percentile, you're not making it. So this is, I was just reading this book by the guy who's the CEO of Dick's Sporting Goods. And he talks how he worked really hard in baseball, but he simply didn't have the talent and he knew he wasn't going to make it as an athlete. So there is a certain baseline level of talent. Now, if you're above that line, now you're competing against everybody else who's above that line. And not everybody, even in that group, is going to make it. So your pros come from this group, but not everybody in the group makes it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the talent part, because I often hear people say, and I've talked about this many times, you probably heard the saying, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
Sure.
And a lot of people repeat that. And in certain instances, it is true, but not in every instance. In the sports world, that's not true, because if someone is so much more talented than you, like if I was to play LeBron James in basketball now, I don't play anymore. I would say you played him. How tall were you, Bill?
I'm short, man. I'm only like 5'8".
Okay, great.
I'll get crushed.
Let's use you. Yeah, let's use you as an example. So let's say I give you all my YouTube videos to train you for 6 months to play LeBron James in a game, and he didn't train at all. He's still going to beat you. Right?
Great.
Why? Because the talent gap is too big. So you can work as hard as you want. That's not going to change.
I'm donezo, Dre.
Right, exactly. So that's what I mean to help people understand. In sports, that's how it goes. So because sports is very, is black and white, is objective. So anyway. To answer your other question, when it comes to the things that I would teach people, it was a skill thing as well, because, again, nobody taught me how to play basketball. So if I was able to build a kid from the ground up, let's say I take my son and he wants to play basketball and I want to build him from the ground up, I would teach him everything that I ever put on YouTube. And he would be learning it since he was 5 years old, as opposed to me who learned it at 14. And then I had to do a ton of trial and error because I didn't know what worked versus what didn't. But what if I had some guy who already made it, who could just tell me, do exactly these 150 things in this order, I would have been a lot better player.
Right.
And there was a bunch of tangible things. Then when it came to the mindset stuff, and I didn't even go deeper into this, but I will here. When it came to the mindset stuff, I didn't think the stuff I was sharing with mindset was that groundbreaking, because this is just my normal way of thinking.
It was just your thoughts, right? Like you just said, hey, I'm just, this is just the way I think. And I'm just putting out the content, right?
Yeah. Correct. Right. But here's the thing. If you're at a basketball court, right, and I walk past the court and I watch you practice for a few minutes, I can tell what you're missing. All right, this guy can't dribble with his left hand, or his shot form is kind of off, or his footwork is kind of slow. I could tell you how to change it just by watching you, because I can see what you're doing. But I have no idea what's going on in your head. I can't observe your mindset. I can observe your physical movements. I cannot observe mindset. So I undervalued how much the mindset stuff was useful for people, because you have no idea what's going on in another person's head when you walk past them in the grocery store. You don't know. I can see you. I can see you. It looks like something's wrong with your leg. All right. It looks like your arm's broken, but I can't tell what's going on in your mind. You could be feeling great or feeling terrible and not show it. So when I started talking about mindset, people had to tell me, Dre, nobody talks about mindset like this. I never heard anybody explain discipline the way you explain discipline. I never heard anybody talk about mental toughness and personal accountability in that way. Like, I really appreciate that. I had to go off of what people said, because there's no way of me knowing whether you can dribble or not. I can know if you can dribble or not. I don't know if you're disciplined. I would have to follow you around every day to know. And that's how I started to value the mindset piece, because people were just telling me like, hey, your way of explaining things is unique. And this is not, most people don't talk like this. And the more people told me that, the more I realized that my true superpower, Bill, was not basketball. I know we're talking about it a lot here because that's the background. But my true superpower is not basketball or entrepreneurship or book writing or even mindset. My superpower is my ability to take complex concepts and break them down into simple, digestible ideas. Is that any subject that I understand, I can break it down and make it easy enough for a fifth grader to understand it. And I tell any expert in anything, you must have this ability. If you want to reach a wide audience, you have to be able to break down your expertise to the simplest common denominator, so a person who knows absolutely nothing can understand it. And that's what I do best. Basketball just happened to be the tool at that time.
I see. Yeah, that's it's a really interesting way to look at it and explain it. And I think there's probably not that many people that have that same mindset as you. I'm curious, you know, along the, you know, with the with the discipline? Like, how did you learn to be so disciplined?
Excellent question. I had to credit my parents. I'm a product of a two-parent household, mother and father. I knew where they were every day. And my parents were not entrepreneurs. Their jobs were not fun. I knew what both of them did for a living. My mom was in the educational space. And that's what she wanted to do. That was her thing. She gave up a little bit, put her educational dreams on hold when she had kids. She had kids when she was like 21, me and my sister were about a year apart. And my father worked, my father's a musician. He would do music though on the side. He was never a full-time musician. He had a full-time job working at a factory. I've been there. I saw where he worked. This is basically manual labor is what my dad did. Probably these days that job is going to get replaced by some robots. But back then it was humans doing it. And he did that Monday through Friday for probably close to 30 years. And the thing that I get from my parents, whenever people ask me this question, I'm glad that you asked, is I tell parents all the time, do you have children?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. I got two.
And I tell parents, your kids don't do what you say. They do what you do. I didn't make up that saying. That's always been a thing. They follow your activities, no matter what you say. And my parents they had jobs that I know they didn't really like. I saw what my dad did. So I know it was nothing fun about that job. Maybe he enjoyed the work once he got into it and he was good and he likes the money and he likes the camaraderie, whatever. But that was not it. The job itself, that was labor. It was physical labor is what he did. And his hands would be all greasy and have dirt in his nails and he couldn't get it out no matter how many showers you took because he did it all day, every day.
Yeah, it's basically permanent. Yeah.
Yes, it's not an enjoyable job. He might got it out of his nails now because he's retired. So I think after 3 or 4 years, it might finally
worked its way out, huh?
Exactly. Right. And my mom, even though she would work in the educational space, she worked at a couple jobs and then she ran her own daycare for some time. She would often, I would hear her on the phone. I don't know who she was talking to, but she'd be on the phone complaining about the people she worked with. This is what women do. They complain about the other girls they don't like. Right? So mom.
No way.
Yeah, that's what she would do every day after work. I don't know who she was talking to, but she always had somebody to vent to. And again, I know my dad didn't love what he was doing. And then my dad would go do music at night. He would sleep. My dad would sleep like 4 or 5 hours a night. There's no way he could get any other sleep. He would get home at like 11, 12 o'clock, like 4 or 5 times a week. And then he would be up before I got up. I got up at like 6 o'clock to go to school. He would be gone. By the time I got up, he was gone. So there's no way he was sleeping more than 4 to 5 hours a night. And the point being is that my parents never, ever preached to my sister and I about, hey, do you see what we're doing? Do you see us going to work every day? Do you see us waking up every day, even when we're tired, even when it's cold, even when we don't have a car, we got to take public transportation to get to our jobs and get home from our jobs. They never preached about it, but they showed up every single day and they did their jobs. And me, myself, I did not go into traditional work. I'm an entrepreneur. I own my own business. And the kind of business that I have today, my parents could not have done this in the 80s because it didn't exist. And they couldn't have got on a Riverside call. There was no Zoom.
Yeah, right.
They also were not athletes. My dad is like 5'8". My mom's like 5'7". They couldn't play basketball, and they are biological. I'm 6'4". These things that I ended up doing have nothing to do with what my parents were doing. However, when I got on the basketball court, I took the same stuff that I had saw modeled for me at home, which is show up every day and do your job, and I applied that to basketball. And then I saw how it worked in basketball, and I applied it to business. And that's how we got here now.
Yeah. So I'm curious, earlier on when we first started, you talked about, competition and that the game for you was more about the competition. Like where'd you develop that mindset from? Like this fierce competition mindset that you have?
That's another good question. I don't know. I don't know where I got that from. I mean, my dad is competitive. He's into sports. He wasn't no athlete like that. I think he played baseball in high school, but he had no aspirations beyond that.
It was just kind of like a natural instinct, huh?
Yeah, I think it naturally came to me. Who knows? I mean, somebody who's into early childhood development can probably psychoanalyze me if I sat with a therapist yeah, and probably right. figure out where it really comes from.
Yeah.
But it was really, to me, it just feels like it came naturally. It's probably something deeper than that, but I couldn't explain it to you. But I've always been into sports. And once I saw the way that I could channel, because every young male has these, for lack of a better term, aggressive instincts. So we have testosterone. Right? We want to compete. We want to dominate. We want to win something. And different men, if they don't have the proper guidance, they find the wrong outlets for that. And they end up in the system. I told you, I come from a two-parent household. So I had, what in our culture, we call it home training. I had proper home training to where I knew not to do the wrong thing with those impulses. I got introduced to sports and I was able to get that energy out through sports. I just had to find the right sport. So a little bit of football didn't work. Baseball didn't work. Found basketball, and that worked.
Well, I think you answered your own question there. I don't think you need to go to the therapy session. I think that was it. And again, I think it stems back to, again, you're just like you said, your childhood and your parents and the example that they set and that, you know, they taught you to be able to channel, we call it aggressiveness, whatever it is, but they taught you to channel that, whatever that energy was, you know, again, because it could be used for good or bad, and you could say that about anything, right? So like you had all this energy, right, as a kid, as you know, anyone else would too. But again, like you chose this way instead of that way. And, you know, if you would have chose that way, you know, meaning the other way, you know, we probably wouldn't be here today. But so again, I think credit to your parents. I think you probably answered your own question there at that. The reason I was curious about that is because, you know, I heard you mention earlier too that you said, I think you said you played basketball in high school, but you never, maybe either you didn't take it as serious. I forget exactly what you said, but you said either you didn't take it. Yeah, you didn't really. Yeah. So that's why I'm curious. So like, did you play all throughout high school, or you just didn't take it as serious?
No, I was taking it serious. I just wasn't good yet.
Oh, I see.
I didn't make the team until I was a senior. And then that one year I was on the team, I didn't really get in the game much. I was taking it very seriously, but my results were not serious.
I see. Okay. So you never made the team, and actually you didn't actually play until you said you were a senior?
Correct. I made it that one year. And then that one year I still sat on the bench.
What kept you going? Because most people, majority of people, and I don't know this percentage, but it's probably a pretty high percentage. Most people that I'll say were in your position or would be in a position like yourself, most people would just quit and give up probably after the first year.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I mean, you just kept going.
Correct.
I really admire that, about you, and just, I think we share the same mentality with things. It seems like you have a long-term vision, a long-term mentality that like, hey, I'm just going to learn and keep getting better. I'm curious, from a standpoint of, maybe like challenges and failures that you've had along the way. It doesn't even have to be basketball. I'm just curious, talking about business, talking about creating content, talking about, writing, your books, along the way for you, like what challenges, did you maybe face, and or what, was there a failure or two or 10 that you were able to learn from and then channel that energy from, that experience, not necessarily that it might've been negative, but it was an experience that you said like, oh man, that was a failure. That sucked. It hurts. Right. But like, how do I learn from that?
Yeah. Continuing to try in high school, I figured, well, I might as well just try out. I mean, I know when tryouts are, I might as well just try. I mean, what's the point? Because I knew that I wanted to try to make it in basketball. I didn't quite know what making it meant or how I would do it. But I mean, it's tryouts. Why not just show up to tryouts? What do I have to lose? If I get cut, I get cut. But at least I might as well give it a shot. And I just kept trying. And then the senior year, I did finally make the team. And that was validating to me to just be on the roster, even though during the season, I didn't do anything. Didn't do anything of note during the season. But just to make the roster was at least validation of the effort that I had put in from the age of 14 all the way up through age of 18. And then going to college, that summer, I graduated high school in the year 2000, started college that same fall. That summer is when I finally started to feel actually confident as a basketball player. I started to feel like I was actually good, meaning I felt like I could play with anyone and at least hold my own. Maybe not beat anybody, but I could at least hold my own against anyone that summer after high school. So then when I got to college, I had a much more confidence on the court than I had had just 6 months earlier in high school. Still wasn't quite sure how to put it all together in a game because I didn't have a lot of game experience, but it was a step forward in the right direction. Now, answering the rest of your question, just times where I face setbacks. I mean, in the transition into business, we talked about basketball so much. So in the transition into business as an entrepreneur in 2015, the first idea I had was I was going to do professional speaking because I found out about it. I'd already been doing a lot of quote unquote speaking through my video content. And I found out that there was a whole industry behind speaking. So I didn't know that was a thing, that people would pay you to just get on stage and talk for an hour. And I felt like I was pretty good at talking. And I had this framework that, and I wasn't calling it that then, but I had this concept of what I call work on your game, which is basically taking all the stuff that works in sports and applying it to the professional world through these pieces that we talked about, discipline, confidence, mental toughness, personal initiative. I still give that speech to this very day. The biggest challenge going into that was figuring out how to get your foot in the door. Because if nobody knows you in the speaking business, you're making a whole lot of calls and a lot of emails and not hearing back. Yeah. I spent the first few years, 2015 up through 20, I would say that for that 5 years, 2015 to 2020, doing a lot of pursuing of speaking gigs. I landed a good number, but I also got turned down for a lot more than I landed. know, finally got to the point of making some money for speaking gigs. I converted a lot of free speeches into paid speeches, which is what my mentor, I had a mentor in the speaking business that matters as well. She was already in the game, full-time speaking. And she told me all the pieces that I needed to have. She told me all the steps that I needed to take. And I followed all the steps, got all the pieces, and slowly things started working. And she always told me, Dre, you know you're a good speaker, not because when you get done speaking, everybody stands up and claps for you. That doesn't mean anything. What matters is after you speak, somebody offers to pay you to speak again. Now, that's how you know you're good, when somebody offers you some money, not because they clap for you. People clap for anything, but you got to give you some money. So it was a challenge. It wasn't any one big thing that happened, but it was just phone call after phone call and putting leads in a CRM and sending email follow-ups and having conversations with people who kind of took my information, but then nothing happened. And then doing a whole lot of free gigs. I did a whole lot of free speaking between 2015 and 2020. Just to get my name out there. And I looked at speaking the same way I looked at basketball, Bill, which was this, that nobody knows me, but if I can just get on the court, i.e. on the stage, if I'm any good, then by the time I get off the stage, I'm going to get the same questions and speaking that similar to what I got in basketball. Who taught you? Where do you play? Did you go to school? Or where do you play now? All right. And speaking, it would be, okay, do you speak at these kind of events? Do you do sales trainings? All right. Can you come speak at our conference? All right. Can we offer you this much money? If you're getting that, then you know that you're good. So I just took a parallel. There's a lot of parallels between my athletic career.
There's a lot, a real lot. Yeah. Yeah. And that same mindset of, I mean, you just said it, like literally, it's like, you know, it was two different stories from, you know, your basketball days of, you know, of high school, of just constantly trying out for years and years and years, and then finally making the team and playing. It's the same thing, you know, it's an exact parallel. I just, you know, that's, I noticed, right. And I'm sure everybody else listening knows too, if, you know, you're speaking, you know, the speaking, you know, part of your journey is, you know, you started, you know, from nothing, and you just kept showing up and doing the work and making the calls and whatever it was, maybe sometimes looking silly, sometimes not, but you just kept showing up and doing the work, and then it worked. And, you know, for you, so, you know, you mentioned you had a mentor. If you didn't have that mentor, you know, for, you know, in the speaking arena, right, that you were, you know, getting into, I mean, do you think your life would look different if you didn't have that mentor?
I think I would have ended up figuring it out one way or another.
But maybe just would have took longer.
Yeah, probably would have took longer. And maybe I just would have taken a different route, because at that point I was had some books out. I had courses, and I was still selling training programs to basketball players. So I probably would have done a lot more than that, or more of that stuff, mm-hmm. instead of adding this piece of speaking. And I will tell you one thing when it came to the mentor. Her name is Donna St. Louis, and she helped me out a lot basically give me the game. I call it the game, when you're just telling someone what steps they need to take.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting thing I will tell you when it comes to personal initiative, because the way I met her, I went to a Toastmasters. You familiar with Toastmasters?
I don't think so.
So Toastmasters is basically it's a worldwide international company that's basically it's a volunteer organization where people get together and work on communication.
Okay.
A couple of people get up and give a speech for maybe 5-6 minutes, and then people come up and evaluate them. And it's a worldwide organization. So if you look it up, cool. You'll probably find
it.
Probably one where you live. Where are you located?
I'm in Pennsylvania. Like I'm like the north part of PA. So we're about 2 hour drive of 2 hours north of Philadelphia.
What town?
In Wilkes-Barre, Scranton.
Yeah, I'm from Philadelphia. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I did know that.
Yeah, I don't think we talked about that. Yeah, I'm in Miami, but I'm from Philadelphia.
Okay, yeah, okay. Because honestly, I mean, I didn't know where you lived, but I think I knew you didn't live in, I mean, just from your content, I could tell, I think you weren't in Philly, right?
Not in Philadelphia.
Yeah, yeah.
no palm trees in Philadelphia.
Yeah, no, definitely not. I mean, if there were, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, weird things sometimes go on down there, but yeah, no,
answer your question. So what I was saying was, I met her I didn't meet her at Toastmasters. I went to Toastmasters when I had decided that I was going to try to become a professional speaker once I found out that was a thing. So at the meeting, I gave a quick little speech of who I was, my background. I'm getting out of playing pro sports and I want to become a professional speaker. I thought maybe Toastmasters was the place where I could learn to do that. That's why I went to the meeting. Turns out that's not what Toastmasters is for. It's really for practicing your public speaking skills for any reason, not for business reasons. But at the end of the meeting, another guy came up to me and he said, hey, we were only two black guys in the meeting. And it wasn't that many people. It was like 10 people in the room. And he said, hey, Dre, I am also getting out of a sport and I'm trying to be a professional speaker. This is just random serendipity. Turns out this guy was an NFL player. And when he told me his name, I recognized the name, but I didn't know his face. Because, you know, football players, they wear the helmets.
Yeah, sometimes you know,
his name,
yeah.
You don't know what he looks like. So I had no idea what this guy looked like. But when he said his name, I said, oh, I heard of this guy. And anyway, he was going to an event that was all for professional speakers. And this event's called the National Speakers Association. You familiar with them?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So he was going to the NSA conference in San Diego. He said, anybody I meet at the event, I'll just pass you their information, because I was going to a different event that same date, so I couldn't go to the one he was going to. So he passed me one person's information. That was this woman who became my mentor. I cold called her because I was waiting to see this guy again. His name was Phil. I was waiting to see Phil again so he could give me some information on who is this person's information you gave me. Who is she? What do we know about it? Did you tell her about me? And I didn't see him again because he didn't come to the next meeting. So I figured, let me just call the woman outright and let's just see. So I called her. She answered. I said, hey, I got your information from such and such. Did he mention me to you? She said, yes, he did mention you. But she didn't know anything about me. So I just told her who I was. Hey, I used to play sports. You know, I'm trying to get in professional speaking. And at the time, she happened to be at her home office. So I could hear her clicking on her computer. She said, do you have a website? And I told her, I did have a website. So she looked at my website. And on my website at the time, it was more basketball focused. I was starting to lean towards the business. But on my website, you could see embedded YouTube videos from my YouTube days. She said, oh, you're on YouTube. And I had books. She said, oh, you have books. And long story short, she invited me to come meet her. She lived about 45 minutes away from me. I was living in Southeast at the time. She was like north of Miami. About an hour I had to go drive. Go meet her at a Starbucks. We were supposed to meet for 30 minutes. That 30-minute meeting became 3 hours. And the reason the meeting was 3 hours is not because I dazzled her with my speaking. Is because she was doing most of the talking. I was just taking notes. And I was using Evernote. And when we sat down, you know, I asked her a question or two, and she started talking about stuff, and I was just taking notes on everything she said. And I was like I've always been this type of person. I'm like a court stenographer. When I'm taking notes from somebody, I'm basically writing down everything you said. So I'm writing down everything she was saying, and at certain points, she would stop talking, and she would say, is any of this useful for you? And at one point, I turned around my laptop and showed her the notes that I had taken from what she was saying, and she was blown away, because she was like, I didn't even know the stuff that I was saying was this, because she was just used to saying it. She hadn't seen it. And the reason that the meeting went for so long, because I was just taking notes on everything that she said. And later on, she told me, she said, Dre, when you called me that day, I had already decided that the next time somebody called me and said, I want to get into professional speaking, can you help me? I was going to tell them no. She said, I can't tell you how many different people I've sat at that exact same Starbucks, had the exact same meeting with them. Not 3 hours, but 30 minutes about speaking. And I told them what they needed to do. Do this, 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 this. This is how it works. Here's how it doesn't work. Here's what you think it is. Here's what it actually is. So I've had that meeting with so many speakers, and most of them, they take all the information from me. And what do they do? What do you think the answer was, Bill?
They didn't do what she said.
They don't do anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So she was saying, I wasn't going to meet with anybody anymore. But when you called me, the only reason I decided to meet with you, Dre, is because when I looked you up on my computer that day when you called me, I saw you were already doing stuff. So I figured that you might be an action taker because you were already taking action, because you already had a website, you had YouTube, you had books, you had a name for your thing. My website's called DreAllDay.com, at least my main site back then. So you had a name, you had this work on your game thing, you had something, you had some substance. That's the only reason I met with you. And then when I met with you, you were actually writing down everything I was saying. And then after the meeting, you followed up with me and showed me that you were actually doing the stuff that I told you to do. That's the only reason I kept taking your calls, because you were actually following through on the stuff I was saying. And when you talk about personal initiative, and I told you, that's one of the four pillars of what Work On Your Game is about. That's how because again, that one meeting might've just been one meeting. The reason why she became my mentor is because I kept doing everything she told me to do. And that's how I came to learn everything that I learned from her.
What are those four pillars?
Discipline, showing up every day to do the work, confidence, put yourself out there boldly and authentically. Mental toughness. Keep showing up, doing the work, putting yourself out there, even when the success you've expected to achieve is yet to be achieved. And personal initiative. Be a go-getter who goes and makes things happen instead of waiting for things to happen.
Is that, you said, so that's basically the, you know, I'm sure there's obviously a lot more, you know, to the book. And if maybe you wanted to, you know, give us a little more about the book, beyond that, I'd love to hear a little bit more.
Yeah, but that wasn't really about a book. That's just the entire brand of Work On Your Game. Now, I do literally have a book called Work On Your Game.
That's what I'm referring to. Yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit more about it.
Sure. So in the book Work On Your Game, I share those pillars, of course, and I share some other pieces that go around it. And that book is all about how the entire formula came to be, how the framework came to be, where it came from, where I come from. So the book splices in some of my personal experience with why I talk about the things that I talk about and where they came from, what experiences came from that, what knowledge and understanding and insights came from it, and here's how you can use it. So what I was told, I had a guy who was in 21 years in the military, and now he does business with Department of Defense, has his own company. And he read the book, Work on Your Game. And he said to me, Dre, this book is the perfect formula for anyone who is transitioning from any part of life to another part of life. And he said, it's industry. He said, it's industry agnostic, meaning it doesn't matter what industry you're in or what industry you're going to. This book tells you all the pieces you need to go from here to here in your life. And I wasn't writing it with that as the goal. But when he said it and I thought about it, I said, well, that's exactly what I did. So it makes perfect sense that that's how he perceived it. So that's what that book is about. And if people want to get the book, you can just go to workonyourgamebook.com.
So it seems like the reoccurring theme of your life, Dre, has always been everything that you've done. You're like documenting like what's in your head and your mind and your mindset. Like you've been documenting it again, whether it was on YouTube, whatever. And, you know, again, like from basketball to business, to speaking, to, you know, mindset, all that. And you've always found a way, which I think is really, cool. And I think it's very hard for people to be able to do this is, you know, you've been able to take like your exact experience as you're doing it, document it in whatever form it may be, put it down, then have it be something that somebody could then, you know, utilize to be able to better themselves. And again, just like you said, you know, as that gentleman had told you, you know, with the book, which I think is really interesting as he put it, is it's, you know, it doesn't matter where you're at, you know, in career wise or, you know, where you're at and where you're going, you know, somebody could take it and they can learn from it. And again, it's kind of like sort of like your live experience of like, hey, I did this, you know, I did this from here and I took it to here and here's how I did it. So I think it's really cool that you've been able to do that. And again, you've been able to do that. It seems multiple times has kind of been like the pattern that I've seen, you know, at least from our conversation here and from, you know, seeing some of your content. So I think that's, it's just really, really cool. Like I said, I don't think there's a lot of people that are able to do that. Most people just move on and they don't really take and learn from that experience and then be able to capitalize on it. I think that's, and you have. So,
yes. So thank you. And the thing is, the first part of what you said there is the documentation. And that's going to be a huge thing for anyone listening to this who's in the creative space, whether you're a podcaster, entrepreneur, author, coach, speaker, consultant, et cetera, anybody in that space, or actually, I'll expand even further. Anyone who's a professional at what you do and you have some specialized knowledge in your space, the more of it you have documented already, or the more that you will have documented, I would say in the next 5 years, between now and 2030, there's going to be a huge business opportunity for everybody with automation and artificial intelligence as quickly as it's coming. The more stuff you have documented, the more potential you're going to have of creating something that a lot of people don't even think is possible moving forward. Because what's coming is someone like myself is going to be able to have an artificial intelligence version of me doing all my coaching calls for me, all my sales calls for me, creating new content for me. And it's all going to be based on my language, my voice, my speech patterns, and it's even going to look like me. I won't have to do any other work. And I can have 10 Dre's doing 10 coaching calls at the same time, and I'm making money off of all of them, and I'm not even doing the work because I have so much of my knowledge and expertise and insights documented already. You just feed it into the system, and the system does the magic. So anyone, even if you're new, even if you're coming into the game right now today, get your knowledge out of your head and somehow, some way, quote unquote, on paper, because that's where the business is going. By 2030, I guarantee you this is going to be taking off. It might be faster than that.
Yeah, Dre, I think you're 100% right. And so was that, you know, what you just said? I mean, obviously, it sounds like you probably already, you know, have that in motion. So is that kind of a little insight to what Dre's up to next?
That's one of the biggest things. Yes. One of the biggest things I'm excited about moving forward is taking all of my knowledge and looking at these, I don't know how much you're into tech, but these custom GPTs and
all day, yeah, all the time.
And yeah, and the bot can basically answer the questions based on just this base of knowledge that came from right here.
Yep.
I'm like, man, if this thing can actually do what it says it can do,
there's game a changer.
Whole, my head is spinning. Yeah. With all the things that I can do with it. So that's what I'm excited about right now.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to continue to see your journey and see what you're going to do next. Obviously, I think we got a little teaser there, which is cool. So, before we end, I mean, is there anything else you want to add or, and obviously, you know, give, give you know, my audience let them know where they could purchase your books, where they could find your content. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious at this point. People have already probably looked you up on your channel and your website, but give us a little direction of where people need to go.
Sure. So the last thing I would leave everybody with is that everybody has a game. All right. You don't have to be an athlete to have a game. You can be a lawyer. There's a game to being a lawyer. There's a game to being a podcaster. There's a game to being a parent. And our job is to figure out what that game is, because often I find people think they're in one game, they're actually in another. Know what your game actually is and what the key to that game is. Then you go work on your game so that you have the ability to execute there. Then you have to go perform and you got to produce results. This is a performance and a results-based business. It always has been and it always will be. That is your job out here. And as far as me, you can find me on all the social media platforms. You can get a free copy of my probably my most popular book right now. Is a book called The Third Day. And this book is all about discipline.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're giving your best effort when you least feel like it. So you can get a copy of this book. The subtitle is The Decision That Separates the Pros from the Amateurs. It's all about what you do on that day when you don't feel like getting out of bed, your back hurts, you're tired, you don't feel like making those calls. Do you do the job anyway? That's what separates the pros from the amateurs. Get a free copy of this book. Just go to thirddaybook.com. The book is free. We just ask that you cover the shipping. We'll ship this right to your doorstep. And lastly, Bill, I just want to thank you for, first of all, asking these questions and giving me the space to articulate and explain them, and also for sharing your platform and opening your audience up to hearing what I have to say. So I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, Dre, I appreciate you. I appreciate taking the time. And, I like I said, I really enjoyed hearing, more of your journey. And like I said, I have a similar mindset that you do. So it's nice to have a conversation with somebody that gets it, because again, not a lot of people do. And hey, maybe that's not what they're interested in. That's okay. But, so again, I appreciate you hopping on here with me today. Dre Baldwin, this is the On the Stacks podcast. Thanks for joining me.
If you want to see more On the Stacks content, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/onthestackspodcast or search the hashtag On the Stacks on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn.